Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Unplugged. We join you with a feeling of relief more than anything. It wasn't super by any means, as most people would acknowledge. It was hard work. It was a tough slog during the first half. It was utterly frustrating. And we spoke about last week the loss to Essendon left us precarious in the situation where we're expected to beat Richmond, but if we didn't, we're in all sorts of trouble, and we're sitting there staring at that cliff for probably much of the first half of the game, thinking we dropped a game we should never have lost. Now we're going to butcher this one in an awkward ground against a side that's hungry, and you know we put in a shocker at just the worst time, and it's going to ruin the whole year. But sometimes you just have to pass a character test. You're not playing particularly well. It's not a day that's been super for you, but you just have to find a way. And I think they were able to do that. And pleasingly, it was leadership in a lot of respects that sort of dragged them over the line, the skipper and various others that were able to do it. And look, that's okay. You're going to win ugly sometimes. There's a lot to work on out of the game. There's a lot that needs to improve out of the game. But they got there. Third quarter was, I guess, as well as they've played in a little while, but after a diabolical first half, it must be said. And Nick, before we jump into the reviews of the game, and I'll get you to kick it off in a minute, you've got a bit of a public service announcement for those who may be joining us off the bat here.
Oh, just quickly, obviously everyone's kind of aware, I think, of the challenges that media organisations, podcasts, publishers, etc., having with Facebook, with Meta, and the possibility of Meta leaving the Australian environment in the next couple of months. So obviously Facebook is a big part of what we do. We'd love it if you could follow or subscribe elsewhere at our other channels on Twitter or TikTok, mm-hmm. and YouTube especially, I think, because there is a probably a 50-50 chance that Facebook leaves our shores in the next couple of months. So if you are a fan of the podcast, give us a follow on YouTube, on Twitter, on TikTok, or wherever you are, and just I guess stay in touch that way. We do have an email subscription on our website, which you can find in the bios on all our channels as well. Which it'd be great if you sign up to as well, and we can send you weekly update whenever we launch a new podcast. But really, yeah, I mean, wherever you can follow and engage with us, it'd be great. We are on TikTok. We are on YouTube. If you prefer a video podcast, you can get us on YouTube. So, just in the occasion that we do lose Facebook and Instagram over the next, 3 or 4 months, we'd love if you could jump on and follow or subscribe on our other platforms and other channels, just to give us a chop out. So thank you in advance.
Absolutely. So hopefully our loyal band can jump across, and if you haven't done that already, do that for us. But yeah, Nick, I think you wrote in the comments here, nearly a 332-game stretch at outgoing goalless in a half for Ross Lyon. I think the last time we were goalless at halftime of any game was 1986. We lost that game by 140 to Carlton, but somehow we won this one.
I'll tell you, in the first 12 minutes of that game, I thought a 100-point loss was on the cards. They jumped us early. And I guess one of the questions I wanted to put to you, we saw – I don't know if it was Friday or on Saturday, we saw the pictures of Richmond training at Punt Road, and they'd marked out the wing specs, the boundary specs at Punt Road, so they could train within the specs of Norwood Oval. Obviously, being very, very skinny wings, very little pocket space, it's a very, very narrow ground. And obviously, we didn't handle that well in Geelong in round one as well. I think it was the one thing that we didn't do. I thought we played pretty well in round one other than that, but we just didn't handle the specs of the ground itself. And I think that we didn't adapt again to the ground size. And I think maybe, Ross talked about it at his presser on Thursday or Friday, whatever it was, that, we should be able to play on a car park. We should be able to be ready to play anywhere. But we didn't do anything in terms of preparation for this ground. We didn't mark out Moorabbin. We didn't mark out specific space to prepare for the narrowness of Norwood Oval. And I just wonder if we got that wrong, and maybe if we had our time again, would we change that preparation? Because they did jump us, and it did feel like whenever we got the ball early in the game, and I don't want to talk too much about the first half because it was awful. And we spoke last week about kind of the depressing nature of doing this podcast sometimes and, you know, talking about some of those awful performances. But in that first half, we just didn't handle it. We didn't handle it well, and they handled it better than us and felt like they were better prepared. When we got the ball, we had nowhere to go. We had no one to kick to. We had no one running past. We had no space. Whereas whenever they won the ball, they had players everywhere ready for a handball off, ready for a short chip out to the wing, you know, whatever it was, they had space everywhere. And it just felt like, you know, Ross has had his detractors over the year, and I think over the years, I should say. And I feel like I'm a big advocate for bringing Ross back. I've loved what we've seen since he's come back in the club. I feel like we can trust where we're at and what we do each week, that we know who's going to turn up and whatever. And it just wasn't that we didn't turn up, because I think we did turn up. The effort, I think, was there, but we just didn't prepare well enough for that abnormal speck of the ground. And I wonder if Ross, being the perfectionist that he is, I wonder if he just got it wrong this week. I mean, what do you guys think?
Maybe. And look, H, I'll throw that to you as well, because it felt like Norwood, the smallest ground that they play AFL on in the country, that Richmond was spreading into 50 metres of space. Mm. And you're thinking, well, exactly, how are they doing that when there's no room on this ground? And look, and you're right. I mean, effort was there, but execution was miles off. Like in the first two minutes of the game, we were missing tackles. We turned the ball over two or three times. And you just get, I don't know, H, you get that sinking feeling sometimes. Like 2 minutes in, I'm like, this looks awful. And it obviously started that way. And but yeah, that was probably the most alarming part, was how much space they found on a tiny ground.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, this is a very different podcast of what it could have been, but it's amazing how on such a narrow ground, how narrow we went. Mm-hmm. We made the ground look 100 meters wide, even more than that, because I think from wing to wing was about 90 meters or something like that. Quite small.
I think it's 108.
Oh, so it's even bigger than I thought it was. Yeah,
it's less than. It's bigger than you think, but it's still less
but
than
we
GMHBA.
We played so narrow, and all of a sudden you'd see there'd be 3-4 Richmond players running down the wing by themselves, and we're going,
yeah,
where are we? Where have we gone? But we've just attacked that corridor so hard and lost the ball, and then it's gone. They've just run around the side of us. And you look at how Geelong play Geelong, and they do that to teams there. They've got that one square wing, and they do it there week after week after week, and teams can't beat it. And you sort of think, you know exactly what you need to do to stop that, but teams just don't do it. And it seems like that's pretty well how we went into the game, and we played a certain way, and Richmond just had a way to go, no, we're just going to keep going that way. But when you look at it too, you sort of think that what we saw in the second half, the effort that we saw in that third quarter particularly, just wasn't there in the first half. We might have been playing exactly the same game, but we just didn't have that effort in the first half. And it was scary sitting there thinking, going, this could get really, really ugly if we actually don't put any effort. And do we break even, or just had almost a same amount of scoring shots as him in the first half, almost, or it was pretty close, I think, in the end, wasn't it? So
yeah, we kicked about, I think they had two more scoring shots, but we kicked two out in the full as well. So
it's not we didn't have the opportunity. We had the opportunity.
Yeah.
The kicking a goal, up one end, we had to kick at the right post, the other end, you had to kick at the left post, and both times we're going, well, we didn't. Max King had the same shot from two shots from the same spot in a row and pretty much kicked the same ball.
Didn't learn
from the first kick. Thinking just those little things, you think, well, he saw what happened in the first one. You know what you got to do now. But we didn't learn when things went wrong. And that seemed to be the problem until we actually went in and, as I say, Ross called the aliens in, we completely changed, and it was a completely different game. And we play as well in that, as well we played in that third quarter. If we played the first or the second quarter that well, is a 7-8 goal win. And that's a simple way to look at it, that it just was not there in the first half.
Parker, I want to ask you, because you've talked about the AFL and the competition in general for a long time and been on record talking about the competition in general for a long time, but I want to ask you about playing the game at Norwood and that decision. I mean, we know that both St Kilda and Richmond have large supporter bases in Melbourne. You know, Richmond is a mass. Obviously, they've had kind of half a decade of incredible success. And their supporter base, their membership base is humongous now. I would suggest that our supporter base would be similar to Richmond, but our membership base isn't.
Yeah, that's fair.
But we do know that Saints fans travel, whether they're members or not, Saints fans travel, especially to Adelaide. We get good coverage for our fan base in Adelaide. We get good coverage of our fan base in Perth. There are particular places around the country that our fans go to every year, and we get a large travelling contingent going to Adelaide. We know that there is a large St Kilda contingent in Adelaide already. Did the AFL make the wrong call playing this game at Norwood as opposed to Adelaide?
Possibly. I'm sort of torn on it in the sense that, look, that's correct. And look, Collingwood played Hawthorn at the Adelaide Oval, and you just know they're not going to put that game at Norwood, for example. Sure. But that's exactly the point we're trying to make, that St Kilda, Richmond, Collingwood, Hawthorn, you know, much of a muchness, which one, you know, Collingwood are the reigning premiers, but which one's going to draw a bigger crowd out of those two? You know, I'm also a romantic football fan in that it's, you know, it's a nice looking ground, it's going out to a different venue, and it's, you know, I like the gather round concept, and so I don't mind that. But I mean, there's a thousand thoughts in my head. One, St Kilda always seems to struggle when they play at random venues like China, Cairns, Wellington, Townsville. New Zealand, Townsville, those sorts of things where they, I don't know why that's the case, but it seems to happen that way. So I was nervous about that, thinking, are we going to handle this? And we didn't. But then, you know, it's probably my biggest annoyance would be at a more mainstream venue having to play there when other sides don't, like playing Geelong at Cadinia Park annoys me more than that. That's a much harder fixture, and it's a fixture that teams like Collingwood and Carlton and Essendon and teams like that just don't get. And that is a clear disparity in the competition. So that annoys me probably more. I can probably live with it in gather round in a neutral type setting. But, you know, if we had to play to Adelaide there or something, it might have been a bit more annoying. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah. I guess the question goes back to, like, I mean, what do they have it at Norwood? Was it 9-8? Just around 10, something like that. Like you get to Moorabbin, you get just over eight. If you put in a couple more seating areas around the hill area at Moorabbin, like why couldn't we play a GWS or a Gold Coast or whatever at Moorabbin? Like it's just
well, they were talking about gather round being a 3-week thing in a couple of years, with one of the weeks being in Melbourne, and I'm like, well, if they did that, I would assume that you'd play Moorabbin,
Vic Park,
Victoria Park, Icon Park, those sorts. I mean, but then again, some venues, like you can't play AFL at Punt Road at the moment, that type of thing. Waverley you couldn't play at.
Waverley you couldn't do.
No, so Windy Hill's not really, I mean, it's a dive anyway, but I mean, like, they're not going to play at a Tullamarine. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done.
Although they're saying gather round in the Barossa next year, which would be cool. I'd go over for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be
weekend
that'd be
in wine some country. Extra perks. Couldn't be horrible.
Extra perks involved in that, but yeah. Look, I don't mind it as a one-off. I don't think that's a disadvantage, whereas Cadinia Park perhaps is. Mm. But yeah, I think in terms of wrapping a bow on that, I mean, a lot of what we'll say would probably come down to votes. Probably a comment on Darcy Wilson. You know, I still think that's a work in progress, and like he's done a couple of things this year that have, you know, need a bit of work, like the handball over the head against Collingwood and some of those sorts of things. But the chase down tackle in the last quarter and his knock on and his
There's
run
two of them in the last quarter,
yeah, that's very encouraging. And I think, look, he was close to a rising star nom. I think Darcy from the Dogs got it, and Harley Reid may have if he didn't. But yeah, that type of performance
takes gets him close. Was Sam Darcy so got this week? So but yeah, I mean, he's our Matthias this year. Ross kept playing Matthias because he knows what he can do. He knows the ability, but he wants those games in him to get that out of him. And that's the only way you can get it. You can't go, oh, week in, week out, few weeks at the VFL, come back for a week, go back out again. That's not going to get him to where we want him to be. You've got to play these guys, these games. And we're starting to see it through Mateus. He knows what's going on. He's giving us a bit, and he's just going to keep growing too, because he's going to keep getting the games. And I mean, anyone that I've seen so many people going, oh, he needs to be dropped. He's not up to it. He's not that. He's 18. Come on. And as I'm saying, he's not going to get any better if he does not play these games. So he's putting out more than quite a few of the first year draftees you see at the moment already. And that's what we want. We want him in there. We want him to get playing games. We want him learning about it. And the only place to learn about the top league is in the top league. There's nothing to learn in the VFL. And you can learn a position or something, but you're not getting the same experience. It's far the difference between them. So,
we don't talk a lot of betting on this podcast, but Harley Reid's a favourite for the Rising Star. Darcy Wilson's well down that. I think it's probably 10 or 11 lines down that market. He's about $23
currently.
Yeah, 26 on a couple of books as well. I imagine that when he does get that nomination, that's going to half probably.
Yeah.
And if you do like, there's probably some value there for Darcy Wilson if you do like him to have a bit of a crack at the Rising Star, because he has shown enough to be in that conversation. People aren't really talking about him, so he's going a little bit under the radar, but he's been excellent.
There will be the breakout game that will put him on the map, and
And we got him for, you know, the run, and he's demonstrated that he can do that. So we'll wrap up, slightly shorter wrap of that game, understandably, I guess something of a great escape, but we'll wrap it up with the votes and the awards. Rowan Marshall gets one for me. I think his second half, he probably gets seven, but in the first half, he was well and truly beaten by Nankervis. He redeemed himself with an excellent second half and one of those leaders who got us home. Riley Bonner, I think, went at something like 92% this week. That was exactly the response we wanted from, you know, he was poor last week in a high possession game. He struggled against Collingwood. That was much better. Wanganeen Miller, you know, one of our best players now officially and one of our most consistent players without a doubt. Cal Wilkie, his last quarter, I mean, he was dropping marks against Essendon, which was uncharacteristic, didn't drop marks this time, stood up in the way and played a typical Cal Wilkie game. Jack Sinclair, a bit stiff not to get to. He was very good. First half, he was one of our only players that wasn't fumbly and handled the conditions well. Josh Battle, he's had an excellent month, but that's almost the best game I've seen him play. Mixed defence with attack, took 13 marks, had 25 possessions. He was outstanding in the first half and then kept it going in the second. And then Jack Steele, we don't win the game without his influence as a leader. He gets three votes, basically lifted the side in the second half and then helped drag them home in the final term. And he looks back to his best. But H, your votes?
Yeah, it was a weird one. It was kind of hard to squeeze a few in. I couldn't quite get Nazzy in this week. I was just like, he was there. He's did what we expect him to do now sort of thing, but couldn't squeeze him in. And, yeah, there was another player that was sort of a bit like, I got to the end of my 10 votes and went, oh, I haven't got them in anywhere. I'm like, I just can't because they, just weren't the first players that came to my mind basically. But as you're saying, Bonner, I mean, came back with a vengeance this week. Nice goal from the boundary from a tight spot that gave us a, like, it came at a really crucial point of the game as well. Josh Bell, the candy man, as you said, just, beautiful football on the day. Just, it did everything was asked of him, gave us drive out of the back line, popped up when we needed him. Just, as you say, probably his best game for a while for the club. I thought Hill ran well. It was when he got knocked down, I mean, there was a bit of concern there for sure. Sort of just sitting there going, just please let that be a knock. Please let it be a knock. And
I thought for sure they were going to sub him and bring Hasty on at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was going to happen, but just going, the run he was giving us at times there, and you're thinking, we it was a crucial to get him back kind of thing. And he came back out and he got the ball in a few tight spots where we needed to break away again. And so thankfully he was right. S.A. Marshall, when he started mimicking basically what Mankervis was doing for Richmond, that's when he stepped into the game. He saw what Mankervis was providing them and said, I'm going to do exactly the same thing for us. And that changed his game completely and gave us some really good service there. Zeb Ross, I thought, was really good again. I haven't heard his name come up much, but I was quite pleased with what he did, to be honest. Another great game. He's had quite a good month now. So Sinclair, too. Again, as you're saying, you wanted to give him two but couldn't get it in. But, yeah, two definitely for, I guess, a vote for each half for being consistent. And, yeah, Jack Steele stood up above and beyond on the day and just led us all the way for the whole game.
Decent chance Nicky might win his own award again, but your votes.
Yeah, well, I want to ask, H, you're the controller of the MVP award. I'd love to know if maybe you have the numbers by the end of the episode or if not, maybe by next week. When the last time Jack Steele got maximum votes from all three of us, because I'm not sure it's happened that often since he won the first two variations of this award. But, pretty similar to you guys. I gave Riley Bonner one vote. I thought it was kind of his redemption game. I think he played a bit like he had a chip on his shoulder, like he had something to prove. And I think that he kind of worked his way into the game, even when we weren't as a team playing very well. And maybe this goes back to, Parko, what you were saying last week about Riley Bonner kind of playing his own game that doesn't quite fit in with what we're doing as a team. And I don't know if that's a positive or negative in this sense, but I thought he was pretty good while we were not very good. And then I thought he was good while we were good in the second half. And I thought that he probably showed a bit to everyone that had kind of knocked him, I guess, over the last couple of weeks. Josh Battle, I gave one vote. I think we've seen him play a lot of good footy over the last 5 years, and there's been periods both as a forward and as a defender that he's played some good footy in patches. This might be the best four-week patch of his career so far, and there's nothing that says that this is just a flash in the pan, that this is just a good period for him. This is the way that he's playing that kind of centre-half back role says to me that this is sustainable now for the rest of his career. This is the benchmark for the rest of his career. Josh Battle has been super, and I would be astounded if he wasn't at this stage. If we look forward to hopefully October, that Josh Battle isn't top five in the best and fairest at this stage. Obviously, a long way to go, but I think he's been excellent and our best defender consistently over the first month of the season. Zane Cordy, I gave a vote because I thought he was our best player in the first half. I thought he and Jack Steele kept us in the game in the first half. Jack Steele was racked up touches. He got a lot of the ball in the first half, but a lot of it was at the bottom of a pack, almost not noticeable, but at halftime when it said he'd had 16 or 17 touches, it was like, shit, where? Like, I haven't seen us win the ball. But Steele had kind of, 15 to 20 touches already. Cordy, I thought, was a lot more noticeable in the first half that he was the guy that stood up in defense and really led the line and was the guy that said, you're not getting past me. And I know that there was a lot of, it was Shea Bolton and Dusty and whatever doing the damage early, but Zane Cordy really stood up as that last line of defense and went, no, this, I'm not going to let this happen. And the fact that we were only kind of 4 to 5 goals down at quarter time, he was a massive part of that. And we don't win that game without Zane Cordy, I don't think. So I would have loved to give him more votes, but I think a lot of guys stood up in the second half that probably took some votes away because it didn't spend as much time down there. But obviously, in that first half, it spent a lot of time in our defensive half. Rowan Marshall, I thought, really stepped up. You mentioned H. The way that he kind of combated Nank. And Nank, played a bit of an unconventional ruckman's role in that he kind of contested the stoppage and then moved back and played the Sicily Stewart, third man up, tall intercept defender type role. And either he played that to perfection or we just treated him as if we do a James Sicily, Tom Stewart, Stephen May kind of guy that we just kept kicking it to him all day. And it was infuriating at halftime just seeing Toby Nanguas, who, like, he's a good player. He's a good, honest battler. You know, he deserves everything that's come his way as an AFL career, but like, he's not a superstar. He's not Stephen May. He's not James Sicily. He's not Tom Stewart. The fact that this dude is just killing us as an intercept defender was just infuriating. And Rowan Marshall did a really good job in the second half, I think, of negating and then beating Toby Nankervis in the second half. And I thought he was super. Nazaya, I think he was good in the first half, and then he stepped up in the second half. I gave him a vote because his disposal is just incredible. And he was willing to do things with the ball that others weren't. Didn't always come off, but you know that with someone like Naz, he's going to attack, he's going to be offensive, and he's going to try and make things happen. And it, like I said, didn't always work in the first half, but I think as we got our structure right and as we adapted better, you know, essentially from the first bounce of the third quarter, he was amazing. There's a St Kilda Stats Twitter account that talked about the number of, I think it was 20 possession games or 25 possession games consecutive for Naz. And I mean, just, we all see what he does when he's got the ball in hand. But I think, like I said last week or the week before, we don't talk often enough about his defensive efforts and his attack on the ball and his contest and strength at the ball. And he looks skinny and weak and whatever, but he just hits the ball real hard. And I love the way he goes about it. Jack Sinclair, I thought, was a two-vote game. I thought he was pretty good. The only thing that kind of held me back from giving him more was that while he was very impactful, it wasn't the Jack Sinclair type of game that we've seen over the last 2 years. And if this is Sinclair building, then over the next month or 6 weeks or the second half of this season, we're in a really good spot because Jack Sinclair can get a lot better. And he was really good, especially in the second half. He was really good. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him play his best footy and Jack Steele play his best footy and Nazaya play his best footy and Rowan Marshall play his best footy and Josh Battle play his best footy, you know, over the next 12 weeks. Because if we get those guys all playing great footy at the same time, like, we're in a great spot, and that's really positive. And Jack Steele, like you said, it probably wasn't his best game of footy. Like, we've seen Jack Steele put on the Superman cape and just do incredible things, but what he did was a real captain's game and just did what needed to be done to get his team over the line. And we've seen him play better, but I'm not sure that there's been many games where we've seen him play harder for four quarters. Like, aside from Cordy in that first half, like I said, Jack Steele was almost a one-man band in that first half. The way that he worked and built and just the toughness and courage to do what he does, I think is underrated still for Jack Steele.
Yeah, definitely. He was. And look, yeah, there are a lot of apologies based on all of that as well. I thought, sure. Wilson himself, a bit of an apology. Even Jack Higgins, again, in a low-scoring game, I thought did a little bit all the way through, which mattered. Jason Blake,
first goal was so important. Like, two minutes to go in the second quarter, it was so important.
And the last 10 seconds in the third, plus he set up the Mitch Owens goal with a superb handball inbound in the third quarter as well. So there's three of our nine again that he's had a hand in. Nearly kicked a couple more, but we'll just knock over the other awards. The Jason Blake Award this week, I think there's one that will get mentioned, so I anticipate my thunder will be stolen. But
yeah, I mean, he got a vote from Nick, but I'd say Cordy was the one I was going to throw up. Probably one of the ones that I looked and went, oh, I would love to have given him a vote, but just couldn't fit him in. And he was just solid down back. Just did the job, did the basically what we needed him to do down there on the day. And I mean, you kind of think, well, yes, we were lucky that Lynch wasn't playing and just all that sort of he's in the right, I guess, the right place for that day. He's going to have to do more of that, I guess, with Dougal coming up fit. And, yeah, he did everything that would have been asked of him on the weekend. So he can keep providing us with that sort of thing. Yeah, it's going to make one hard for Dougal to get back. I mean, as much as he's probably automatic, you'd assume. But, yeah, it makes it hard to actually drop him when it comes to that point. So, yeah, keep going, Zane.
100%. Nick, yours?
Yeah. It's Cordy for me. I gave him a vote, and I did kind of toss up whether if you give him a vote, can you then give him this award? And I think so, because I think he's one of those guys that I think goes unrecognized at times, and we saw it last year when he came in and played a role both forward and back. He's just a really important part of our squad. And whether or not he plays every week, and obviously Dougal coming back throws a bit of a spanner in the works in terms of where he fits into the lineup and whether you can play both Cordy and Howard in the same team. I don't know, but what I've and I wasn't a huge fan of signing Zane Cordy kind of 18 months ago or whatever it was, but he's proven me wrong big time, because whenever he's stepped in, I'm not sure he's played a bad game for us. His worst game, I think, has probably been solid. He's played a role. And even when it was forward and he had one touch, that one touch was a goal. A goal when it was needed. Not just one goal when we're six goals up, but one goal when we're 4 points up or a couple of points down or whatever, and he'd take a strong mark and kick straight. And when he's played back, he's played games like he did on Sunday, where he's just... he's taken the best key forward and he's just done a job. It certainly wasn't, and I know they've had injuries and whatever up forward for Richmond, but it was the smalls that did damage for them early. But Zane Cordy didn't put a foot wrong. And I think that you know what you're going to get out of Zane Cordy. Dougal Howard, I think, is a better footballer. I think he's a better player. But you get the ups and downs, as we've talked about for a couple of years, the space cadet decision-making and whatever. And there's pros and cons, but Zane Cordy is that very level. You know what you're going to get. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Doesn't get a lot of the ball. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes and that sort of thing. And I'm really happy with Zane as kind of the backup fullback. And if there's a way that you can get Howard and Cordy to work together, then I'm all in to have a look at that, at what that looks like. I just think that Cordy doesn't get the credit that he deserves. And this week, even though I gave him a vote, I think it's just kind of the build-up of a long period where he hasn't got that credit. So I wanted to give it to Zane.
Yeah, I just had a quick look. He's had, including last year, so his last nine games, he's had 61 one-percenters. That's a big number.
That's a when big you number.
Compared to other players, and it's a big number. So it means he might not be getting a possession for what he does. He might not get a stat for it, but just throwing himself in there and doing the little thing to get the ball moving or getting it to us, which is huge. I mean,
we've spoken so much about Cal Wilkie and his decision-making and all that sort of stuff, and historically his ability to deliver, disposal efficiency, etc. Zane Cordy played, I think, 89% game time, 88% game time, 100% disposal efficiency from 15 touches, 18 of which were kicks. And if you're getting that kind of out of your fullback and your key defender, then you're in a pretty good spot.
I think so. And look, I'm similar part of the grounds. I mean, I could have given it to both Wilkie and Bonner for responding to the week before. I mean, Wilkie never plays a bad game. That was about as close as it gets to it against Essendon, and he responded. But look, Riley Bonner, I think, given the record 17 turnovers, to then be one of our best ball users a week later and play a really pivotal role, I think, I mean, you know, Shannon, the award around the Jason Blake and the Shannon Noll. I mean, the Shannon Noll is you need a lift, and the Jason Blake is you do the job when it matters most. And I think he's gone from one category straight into the other, so he gets mine. Speaking of Shannon Noll, Nick, did you have an obvious standout this week?
Well, I mean, in the first half, you probably could have picked 18 players of guys that need to lift. I think there's a real obvious one, which is there's a couple of obvious ones. I think if you look at some of the Facebook groups and social media and who they're talking about in terms of guys they want dropped and have to work hard and whatever, there's kind of Filippo and obviously Wilkie last week. The guys talking last week about Cal Wilkie had to be dropped because he had one bad game in 100 and whatever it is that he's played now. Ryan Burns is one who's always he's always going to be on the periphery of the squad, right? Whether he's a best 26 player or a best 22 player, he's never going to be a top 8 player on the list. It's never going to happen. It's like going back to 09-10 when you had Rob Eddy and McWalter and Clint Jones and those guys. They're never going to be top 5 players in the list or whatever, but he plays a role. And I thought that, again, he kind of played a role, although this was probably his worst game of the year for Ronnie Burns. But I do think that he's proven enough over the last month that he is in our best 23 at the moment. Mateus Filippo is a really interesting one because he is incredibly talented. He's incredibly talented. And I do feel like he needs to lift, but I almost feel like that's on the coaching staff to get that to happen because I'm not sure they're utilizing him in the most efficient way possible at the moment. I do feel like over the next 5 to 10 years, he's going to be a very, very good midfielder, like a Bontempelli, you know, the best midfielders in the league, but he's not there yet. And I feel like he'd be best utilized right now, half forward flank, you know, kind of lead up forward, head up to the wing, get some uncontested ball and be able to use his weapons, which is his disposal, his big left foot, you know, hit the scoreboard, all that sort of stuff, which we've seen him do in patches this year. But he was able to do last year playing more forward than midfield. This year, you know, we've seen him more midfield and Mitch Owens spend more time forward. I think there's a swap here. And so my Shannon Knoll lift award is to Ross, and it's to get Mateus playing a role that suits him now. Like, I know we want to develop him and get him in to be an A-grade midfielder in a few years, but we want to be playing finals this year. We're playing both for the future and for the now. And I think to get the best of both worlds, you get Mateus forward of center and get him impacting, hitting the scoreboard, impacting offensively. And I think that we'll see better results right now from Mateus and still develop his game at the same time. But I think he's just best suited there and get more game time into Mitch in the middle at the same time.
I think that's a fair shout, hey?
Yeah, it was a point that we had in our run sheet earlier here, and we didn't really bring it up during the game review, but yeah, Channel 7, your camera work is awful. Absolutely awful. I mean, the Max Kidd goal, that would have been fantastic.
Oh, I was
going
to say.
If we saw it.
Yeah.
I was sitting there going, sorry, we kicked the goal, dude. Where'd it come from?
It was incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just so bad on the day. I don't know if the feed going back to the truck was no good or what it was, but the camera just was just facing the wrong end of the ground at times. So as good as, our second half was, we only saw half of what happened. So, yeah, it was a... just one that I was looking at because, I didn't go sort of anywhere at the team this week. Well, I think we've covered the bits and pieces, but that was probably the most, most frustrating part of what I saw on the weekend.
I think that's all correct. Mine's probably just where this award in a lot of ways kind of started would be Dan Butler. I just think he looks a bit rusty. He'll be okay. But, you know, started okay against Essendon, sort of faded, minimal impact in this game against Richmond. I think obviously Higgins playing well is covering that a little bit. But, look, I like the Filippo nomination in that he's generally a beautiful kick. The last couple of weeks he's sprayed a few shots at goal that he would normally kick. So whether that's a confidence thing. But, I think if Butler can, you know, get back to where we want him to be, then I think that really does help us.
For a game that we didn't want to talk a lot about, we've just done 40 minutes.
That's right. And we are looking forward to our next guest. It has been a popular request when we have asked people.